SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
The Playlist with Ben and Fiona.
You know it's sexual, but you don't know where you are, and the image is in dialogue with you.
Welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Fiona Williams, and I manage our online coverage of movies and TV here at SBS, and I'm joined by my co-host, SBS Channel Manager, Ben Nguyen. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Fiona. Today, your occasional podcast hosts are gifting you with a surprise delivery in your podcast app of choice as we unwrap our best films and TV of the year, run through our summer viewing recommendations, and speak to a special guest or two. Fiona, it's a big show, but it's been a big year.
Sure has. Let's get into it with our best ofs.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear yours. So let's kick it off with movies. Fee, I would struggle to hazard a guess at how many movies you've seen this year.
Well, that's a good question. I haven't tallied it. Ordinarily, I use Letterboxd, the app, to track how many I've done, but I haven't done that yet. I need to get onto that. Yeah. But quite a few, and it's always difficult to sort of boil it down. Well, the best really stand out, I think.
Like, and this is a question for you.
Yes.
How do you rate this year? Before we get into the actual titles, how do you generally rate 2019 in movies?
Look, I think it's been good.
Only time really will tell, I suppose.
It's true.
It's sort of when you're in the moment, sometimes it's hard to tell, was it a bumper crop or was it a bit of a dire harvest?
So true. I guess the fact that I've struggled to get 10 of my best, because like to drill it down to 10 because I've had a 12 sort of lingering, which is good. Some years you might struggle to get 10.
Yeah.
But look, I get a little bit fatigued by the remakes and the do it for the sake of it. I mean, we're not doing a list of worst movies, but I'm just going to find a way to wedge it into the conversation here anyway. But Men in Black International was terrible. That's kind of what I'm talking about with this attempt to just rehash a brand, get it back out there.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of that going on. Yes. Just wait until we get to my list.
Okay. Because we have not compared lists.
No, we haven't.
Maybe that's
but
obvious.
Let's kick off with yours. What's your number 10?
Okay. Well, 11.
All right,
I didn't successfully. I boiled my 12
you're,
down to
you're
11.
You're allowed. You're entitled.
It's an honorary mention, shall we say that.
Yeah.
The Report, sometimes called The Torture Report, but the redacted report. This is the one with Adam Driver and Annette Bening.
Yes.
Had a brief showing in cinemas, but is now on Amazon. Really great political thriller about the FBI report into torture, rendition, all of that black ops stuff. Really, really in my lane. Was great. Not great enough to get on my top 10, but great.
Well, and Adam Driver certainly seems to be having a moment right now.
Right.
His stock is up.
His stock is up and has been up for a couple of years. Yeah. No, he's great. And I love.
But a few things sort of out. Similar timing.
Correct. Yes. Star Wars. But haven't seen Marriage Story, but yeah, The Report is my pick of the bunch.
All right. Fee, what's your number 10?
All right. Number 10, Pain and Glory, Pedro Almodóvar. Yes, with
Antonio Banderas.
Him, very much so. Yes, and a bit of an autobiographical story, loosely based on Pedro's own life. Quite beautiful reflection on Pain and Glory.
Right.
Who knew? It's in the title. Quite wonderful.
I have to admit I haven't seen any of these, so this is a great summer viewing selection for me.
All
keep
right.
going. Number 9.
Okay. My number 9, The Irishman. With friend of the show Martin Scorsese.
Yes.
My mate Marty. with Robert De Niro as old Blue Eyes for some reason. Very disconcerting. And he's been Benjamin Buttoned, de-aged in the process of watching this film.
We all wish that we could have a bit of that in our own lives.
I mean, don't start me. But it's quite a wonderful little footnote to Goodfellas and all of his other mobster movies based on actual people reflecting on the disappearance of Jimmy Hoffa.
Yes.
Yeah, quite wonderful. Number 9, have you seen? No.
No, let's just assume not.
Okay, sing out when you've seen them.
But, yeah, no, I'm loving this list so far. Number 8.
Okay, number 8, Booksmart.
Oh, yes.
Yes, You have seen that, I hope. We talked about it. Yes. Yeah. Good. I very much enjoyed this. And I think it might be lost in some of the end of year conversations because it came out a while back.
Yeah, it is a real joy.
Absolutely.
Yes. Number seven.
Arctic. Mads Mikkelsen, lost in the Arctic. It's sort of like a Gravity, like an All Is Lost, one man against the elements.
What could possibly go wrong with, with a couple of hours of Mads on his own on screen?
Well, nothing as you're watching it. Hell of a lot goes wrong for Mads.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like gripping. Yeah, absolutely. There's a, I guess, a helicopter crash. I can't remember now. There is a crash of some description that strands him in the Arctic and he's trying to get to other places to try and get help. And we're there with him, except we're not because he's on his own. And it's
wonderful.
Yep, do it. It's great.
Another one I really need to watch. It sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
What's number six?
Number six is Ad Astra.
Yes.
You know of it. Brad Pitt, kind of alone. What's going on here? It's a bit of a trend. Him in space, his gravity.
Men against the elements. Is
indeed.
That, is that the theme of the year?
I'm looking at the rest of my list. No, it's not. These are two good ones. Yes, I have spoken at length about this, but definitely Brad Pitt's movie of the year. I wasn't so hot on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But just incredible performance by him and a wonderful film about masculinity in its various shades. I think it's really quite wonderful. So put that one on your list as well.
I will. Number five, Fee.
Number five is Knives Out.
Ah, yes. We talked about this last time.
We did. It's a great caper, sort of a spoof on literary whodunits
that brings
all of that into the conversation. Yeah, very fun. And, great to see people on screen having a great time in a great movie because quite often when everyone says, oh, we had a great time on set.
It doesn't always translate.
Doesn't always translate. Yeah. But this one, yeah.
This time you're in with the fun.
Quite right.
Number four.
The Farewell.
That is on my list.
So that is one you have seen.
I have seen that.
yes, we did speak about this before, but Lily Wang's semi-autobiographical story starring Awkwafina in just a beautiful film. I think it really had a real heart to it that had warmth and humour and...
Yeah, yeah, moving story.
Yeah, so that is on your list.
It is on my list.
Ah, what number?
We'll get to that.
Oh, fine, all right. I look forward to it.
Number three.
Very good.
This is exciting. I've never done a countdown like this before.
Well, we're doing a few in this show. There's TVs yet to come, so...
Well, I'm not sick of it yet.
No. Number three is Destroyer with friend of the show Karen Kusama.
I haven't seen it.
No. Did you listen to my interview with Karen Kusama?
I believe I did.
That is the right answer. Director Karen Kusama was on the show earlier this year, much earlier, I think it was February even. So this is a film with Nicole Kidman in a competing timeline story. She's in the present day of the story, she's sort of the grizzled detective trying to piece together a past case that comes back to haunt her. That's fantastic, and it's a really great genre film. Like, it's a police chase and a thriller, and it's just so well done, and you just get a sense of who this lead character is. It really gets into her head.
Yeah, and it's always great to see her given a role that she can really sink her teeth into.
Exactly. Of course, she does all the movie star performances, but what I love about Nicole Kidman is that she always goes for the smaller films and the indie ones that, not as many people are going to see. I do wonder how many people saw Destroyer, but you should see it if you haven't. That's fantastic. And beautifully directed by Karen Kusama as well.
So now we're getting down to the pointy end. Only a couple left. What could they be? Number two.
Number two. This was very nearly number one, but it's not. Parasite.
Yes.
Also friend of the show.
I have seen it.
Oh, you have?
Yes.
All right. Excellent. So Bong Joon-ho did join us on the show earlier this year. I love this film for
It really is terrific, isn't it?
Is it on your list?
It is on my list.
The impact it had on me watching it, I was laughing, but then in a beat I was curled up, completely tense.
Yeah, I really had no idea going in where this movie was going to go.
Yeah.
But I quickly realised that the title refers to these two families, basically, and how one feeds off the other in a way that's entirely unexpected.
Yeah.
And the characters are just all each so well drawn.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no one standout performance. It's complete ensemble and they play off each other.
I love the family, but I love both families.
Mm-hmm.
I think the mother in the house that they go into kind of neurotic, kind of obsessive about her status, very easily manipulated because of that. Mm-hmm. Like, she's a wonderfully drawn character.
Totally. Yeah. It's not, they're not easy pawns. Like, they're not written as villains so that we're on the side of the family, the grifters who move in to try and just suck as much of from their wealth as they possibly can. No, that's what I love about it. It's entirely relatable towards people that are so well drawn. You find something to relate to within them.
It's part long con kind of movie, part sort of upstairs, downstairs, fast. There's just sort of so many elements there.
Yeah, and genuinely thrilling as well with some revelations that happened within the film. Yeah, love it. Look, it's my 1.5. I can't say it's, in the top 10. It was almost level pegging for number one.
Mm-hmm. Which is number one top movie of the year, according to Fiona, is
Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
I haven't seen this, but I cannot wait.
Well, Boxing Day, you get there, front of the line, at the movies, please. So this one, I think I mentioned it. I saw it at Melbourne International Film Festival. It's done the rounds of the festivals. And this one is by Céline Sciamma, the French director, who will be joining us shortly on the show.
Yes, I can't wait for that either.
Yes, and I didn't pick it because of that, I hasten to admit. This film, it just washes over you. It's a period story in that it's set, I don't know when. On paper, it shouldn't work. So it reads as a bit dusty, and an artist is sent to a very windswept sort of a mansion to paint the portrait of a very reluctant subject. It's a woman who just refuses to sit for an artist because the painting is being commissioned in order to send it to her suitor. So the man who wants to marry her wants to get a look at her. And she don't want to have a bar of it. So from that premise, this film unfolds and it's absolutely gorgeous. And the women, just watching how they try, how she tries to steal glances to, get her, get a sense of being able to run away to paint
her. This is
like an
olden days selfie.
Sure. Well, not a selfie, but yes, trying to snap a picture without someone looking. And it's wonderful. And their stolen glances give way to something much deeper. And it's beautiful. And it's a love story that has so much more to it. And just what happens in the company of women and the household in itself as this love story starts to unfold. And also there's a finality to it because, I mean, she has to paint this picture to then send off to this guy who wants to marry this woman. And so there's a finality, but it's not tragic. It's a gay story. It's a lesbian story that doesn't no one dies. It's not depressing.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And it's my number one.
Well, that is so great.
Thanks, Ben. No, you have to watch it because I would fight anyone who doesn't like this movie.
The fight is coming later.
Yeah, okay. Put up your dukes.
Yes.
And as I say, Céline Sciamma will be coming up in the show to speak at length about this beautiful film. So look out for that. Mm. But first, someone else has got a top 10.
I do have a top 10
list.
Or a
top 11.
Well, so unlike you, Fee.
Oh, here we go.
I have not seen so many films. So my top 10 is almost an arrangement of the 10 films that I did see this year.
Okay.
In order of preference.
Sure.
That's not quite true, but it is almost true. So
this is really just a what have you been watching in number form?
Kind of. I'm fond of all these films in their own way. But it is a very different list to yours. I'm just trying to preface this. There's a few disclaimers going in.
Noted.
My number 10, Top End Wedding.
Okay.
So, I thought this was sweet. Good cast, enjoyable diversion. It felt nice to put an Australian film on this list. And I'm a sucker for a rom-com. It's not a perfect film by any means, but it is an enjoyable road trip wedding movie.
In the top end.
In the top end.
Yes. Lovely. Number 9.
My number 9 is Joker.
Oh, no, I'm out. Sorry.
Just wait till you hear what I've got coming.
Okay, why?
So I think that it is one of the films of the year in that 2019 is going to be remembered for this movie, for better or worse. it is a movie that sticks with you. And I think that there's a lot, again, that it does wrong, but it does create some quite remarkable images that I think will be part of how we think back to this year in movies. I know I'm looking at your dubious face. I'm going to rush on to number 8. I'm going to move along. So
you need to see more movies.
The Farewell is my number 8, so we have talked about that. So that is shared. That's nice. Number 7 is Avengers Endgame. So again, I'm sort of saying, like, this is one of the ways that we're going to think back to this year. You know, it's obviously hugely box office grossing, as was Joker. And when people think back to 2019, they will think back to this movie. Yes, you know, there's a lot of what we'd maybe call fan service in this movie, a lot of just nods and winks back to the previous series. But you know, this is the culmination of so many viewing hours, good time spent in the cinema in this sort of Marvel world. There's some genuine emotion there for a lot of the audience. I saw this with basically a cinema full of teenagers and, you know, there were whoops and cheers and everyone applauded at the end. I think that cinematic masterpiece this is not, but it's a kind of essential piece of our pop culture. That's my argument in favour.
That's fine. And I would also say, like, sometimes it's the experience of watching it that puts a film on the list. Like, sometimes it's there are certain films you do need to watch with the crowd, and that's fine. I'm okay with that one in case you needed permission. But yeah.
I feel like I do from you, Fee. That's basically what this
is. Is it my judgy face?
Yeah. So number 6, Toy Story 4.
Didn't see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is it the best of the Toy Stories? I would probably perhaps put 3 in that category. But time spent with these beloved characters is time well spent in my book. Mm-hmm. So just a terrific story, a kind of like a changing of the guard story, a bit of a feeling of an end of an era, but, you know, just like a beautiful time spent at the cinema.
Sure.
Number 5, Diego Maradona, documentary. So adding a feature documentary to my list.
Very good.
I really adored this. This was from the director of Amy and Senna. Just a very, very fantastic use of archive, which is kind of in, you know, my wheelhouse. I just love creative treatment of archive and just sort of what, you know, in the hands of a good director and good editor, what people can craft out of that. And this, I would say, similar to his previous biographies, transcends just sports movie. Like, it is really a history of class in both Argentina and Italy, and it just tells you so much about that era of Italian politics, Italian culture, the kind of, you know, rivalries that exist within Italy and how they exhibit themselves through sport. And you know, obviously this man as well, who just had come from nothing, turned himself into a megastar just on a virtue of his own hard work and talent and the price that came with.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't catch that one, but I'll put that one on my list. Very good. And you're right about documentaries like that. Sometimes some documentaries you think this needs a narrator. But the way he makes his films, Asif Kapadia, the director, it shows how they should be done.
Yeah.
without any need for someone to explain it. It just unfolds. Yeah. So that was number 5.
Yes.
So we're up to number 4?
Yes, number 4, also a feature documentary. This had a cinema release here this year, so I'm counting it, Free Solo.
Ah, very good. Oscar winner.
It was the Oscar winner this year for Best Documentary. Mm. Very different from Diego Maradona, but I guess sort of in a way also about someone very talented who pushed themselves to achieve great things.
Mm-hmm. To the limit.
Yes. Literal. And I think, so for those who haven't seen it, it's about a free climber who does rock climbing in very dangerous locations without the use of a rope. So it's like it is an edge of your seat experience to see him pull this off. It is predictable in a way that he will pull off the task that he sets himself. But I think what works so well is because the filmmakers themselves are incorporated into the story, and they don't know that he's going to pull it off. They don't know that he's going to survive. Mm-hmm. And so you do experience it vicariously through them. And they're terrified that this guy that they've become close friends with is going to plummet off this rock face.
And that they'll be filming it.
And that they'll be filming it. So that's part of the story as well, yeah. I think. And that's part of, I think a very smart choice to incorporate that into the film. Mm. I think that's part of what makes it work so well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And another thing about Free Solo, at this time of year, you know, kind of coming up to New Year's resolutions, I think if you haven't seen it, check it out, because it will, I would say, inspire you, give you a kick up the butt to get active and sort of actually, you know, see what you can do with your body, because this guy really pushes himself to the limits.
Maybe don't try this at home, but try something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's rock climbing walls within gyms around the country that do come with ropes. So that's an option.
Yes. Maybe don't get your friends to film it the first attempt.
Yeah, but they've got mats on the floor. Like, yeah. That's where I would recommend that you start.
Yeah. Disclaimers. All right. So that was number four.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, what have you got?
So, I know technically this came out last year, but it was a Boxing Day release.
Yeah, look, it's not a hard and fast rule, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you think about it, I mean, well, I haven't seen the Boxing Day releases this year, so will we do this to do this again?
Well, they're anyway, coming up.
I'm letting this off on a technicality.
You've made your own rules here, yeah, so
fine.
What is it?
Yeah, so it's The Favourite. I think, again, is going to be one of those memorable films when we think back to this time, like not least because of everyone's love for Olivia Colman and her wonderful, gracious acceptance of the Oscar. But I mean, we were talking about period films sort of that aren't stuffy.
Yeah.
Like, this is the definition of that.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I would actually put it in the same boat as Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Not only because,
there are a lot of
similarities. Yeah. Yeah, you're quite right. Much different tonally, but yes, full of life and fresh. Okay, good one. Last year, but good one. number two. What
I told you I was scraping for my 10. Yeah. All right.
Number two.
Number two. I know that you had a little go at this in your list, but again, for me, this is just one of the most memorable movies of the year.
It's not Men in Black International, is it?
It is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, okay. Yep.
It does a very good job at creating this fairy tale version of 1960s Hollywood. We've probably seen better from all of the cast, to be honest, but there is a lot of charisma on screen in this movie.
Mm.
It's a movie that's about charisma probably more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And Tarantino is a director that loves to give actors that space to create something that aims for the iconic.
Mm.
And this is clearly, you know, work of you know, with Leo and Brad Pitt.
And Margot Robbie.
They're all, I think, again, it might not be their best roles, but they're sort of trying to sort of imprint something quite indelible on screen.
No, I don't challenge it. It's probably an outlier on the 10 for me. I think I'll really admire it more on subsequent watches. Like, I think there's more to it that I probably didn't get in the first watch, which can be said of a lot of films. It's not something I'm saving for a Tarantino film, but I really admire the way he incorporated audience reaction into this film. For me, it's not Brad Pitt's best role of the year, and I loved Ad Astra.
Yeah.
But yeah, sure. Talk to me again when I've had another watch.
Yeah. And I am staking a claim for, again, it just being one of the movies when we think back to this year, 2019, it's one of and then the year in cinema, we're going to talk about this movie. And we will talk about this movie as well. We have already talked about this movie.
Is this your number one?
My number one of the year is Parasite.
Well,
I mean, there's a fairy tale aspect to this as well. It's kind of set in Korean city of some description, maybe in the near future, kind of a little bit unclear, where you sort of almost have this sort of basement dweller world and this sort of world of the luxurious, sort of rich kind of compound family life.
I think that's contemporary. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Like, it's sort of, I felt like it sort of just had that, like, one remove from reality in a great way. But I'm very glad that that came close to the top of both our lists.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that makes me feel better about not putting it number one. It's one of our ones. Yeah, no, love it so much. So
I'm glad that my list serves some purpose for you.
I like about 7/10 of your list. Yeah. No, very good.
I will give a shout out, an honourable mention.
Yes.
To Charlie's Angels.
Didn't see it, can't comment.
Which I haven't seen either. Oh. But
are you familiar with the concept of a top 10? You need to have seen them.
I'm struggling here, I know. But I know a regular listener of ours, Carolyn, sent me tickets, which I have not yet used, but I do want to give a shout out to the movie on her behalf because I know she is a very regular listener.
Sure. Hi, Carolyn.
But I think that now is a good time to go to a very important conversation that you had with the director of your number one film of the year.
Exactly. So, Celine Sciamma. Unfortunately, this film is not eligible for Oscar because France didn't put it forward as its number one pick.
Damn you, Emmanuel Macron.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Les Miserables is France's Oscar pick. So, alas, Portrait of a Lady on Fire is not going to be in contention for Oscar. It is for a Golden Globe, for whatever that's worth. But anyway, that's by the by.
Thank you, Hollywood Foreign Press.
Yes. No, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, it's coming out Boxing Day, and you absolutely should go and watch it. And here is Celine Sciamma and me gushing about the film to Celine Sciamma. Here you go.
Can't wait.
Celine, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for being interested.
Oh, you're kidding? Oh, my God. Thank you for breaking my heart, I think I need to say as well. I mean, look, I'm an unabashed fan. I adore your movie. Did you consciously set out to make everyone cry?
Yes.
Yes, pretty much. Okay, good.
Yes. So, yeah, I think that's also writing decision, and I like to think about the film and films in general as this very slow arrow that would in the end reach deep your heart, but you know it went really, really smoothly. And it's the kind, you know, sometimes you have to think a film as shape. It's not only about, I don't know, dramaturgy. You can also think as a shape, as a form, as a geometrical form. You know, films can be, I don't know, diamonds. They can be square. They can be round. They can, and yeah, I was thinking about this kind of arrow shape of the film.
Yeah. Well, bullseye. And, you know, it's a love story, of course, but, you know, it's so loaded with ideas and, you know, in the title and just in seeing and being seen and making a film about that as well. So much in there. How did you start? And, like, I guess that's mainly the question. What was your creative starting point in just trying to make this story come to life?
Well, weirdly, the creative starting point was quite simple. It was really the desire to write a love story. Mm-hmm. So it didn't seem too theoretical when I... Sure. Because also it was my first film with grown women. It was about a love story that was, in a way, fully lived, whereas on my previous film, it was much more of a coming-of-age dynamic. Yeah. So where the rise of love and desire is more a rise about yourself this time. Really wanted to get to I would say weirdly to go with the classical love story, but then you get to think about what's classical, and I think a movie feels like a classic when it's full of ideas. I think it's a paradox, but it's, I'm sure if we look at the film, we consider milestones in especially in love stories. The classical is not academical, I think. Two different things. And especially with the period piece, which can bring you a lot of, can bring the academics of others, you know, because it's full of experts, of, it can be, I mean. And just once I decided to go with the heart, then, you know, it's all about finding ideas, because cinema is, films should be full of ideas, and especially if they talk about love, since it's a matter that, I mean, it's it's political how you love and what's the philosophy in love, there's a dynamic in love, and I feel like in the political field we are not talking about that anymore. And so it came naturally in the process of that first initial spark that was also quite an intimate way of telling also a story that is mine. And that's how I work, basically. I have the first talk, and then I'm thinking about, first, not thinking about the narrative, but really thinking about all these ideas. Like, having a big, big, big list of ideas. And I think about those ideas for months before I start thinking about the storytelling. Because then I'm trying to put all these ideas in the storytelling and not doing the opposite, not telling my story and then trying to figure out what it says.
And, this should not be revolutionary in 2019, but depressingly it is. But, for a queer story, for a lesbian love story, there's no ownership. No one dies. It's not a doomed love. It shouldn't stand out for those reasons, but it does.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Of course. I mean, I've spent my life looking for lesbian representation on screen, and it's pretty rare that it's actually done by lesbians, actually. Yeah. So we have had a lot of straight storytelling. And, when the film, when it's not liked, the critics or, could be, it's not about the journalists, but the critics in general would be, coming from men, we don't see the taboo of homosexuality enough. And it's a way, of course, to change the representation, because this representation was a propaganda saying being a lesbian is dangerous, which is, it's true that being a lesbian is dangerous, but it's not because you're going to die and be miserable. Mm. It's because your program is dangerous. And that's why fiction, because it's a different, it's not about life, it's a political vision of life and love. Yeah. And that's what we're putting on the screen when we are actually showing our imaginaries and how powerful they are, because it's about breaking the narrative of love stories that are mostly, even if we're just thinking about the straight love stories, relying on the narrative of conflict. Yeah. So in fact, the film is really based on equality and based a love story, a love dialogue on equality. That's also what makes it a lesbian storytelling. And it's departing from the lesbian representation, but also from the heterosexual representation. Because yes, they're not dying, but some people are telling me it's just an impossible love story because they're not ending up together. And that narrative that we are being told all the time about the fact that a successful love story would be spending your life together in exclusivity. We are trying to break that narrative too, because we are saying love stories about emancipation, and even though the film breaks your heart, actually it opens it. Yeah. It breaks it open. Yeah. And that's also something, that's the thing I thought the most about, obviously, because it was easy deciding not to be harmful to my characters.
Yes.
And not to punish them. That's something quite easy to decide. Then you have to craft this new vision, this new program, and that's what's taking the most time, actually. You have to find new solutions. If you're not going with the narrative conflict, you have to find new solutions to storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not easy to do.
I can't imagine. Yeah. And also, it is a love story, and it's erotic, but not in the usual way. There's not a whole lot of skin, and there's an armpit moment that's very sensual. And what was you thinking in, depicting sexuality and sensuality in a way that's not the norm, just not two people just going at it, if I may be crude?
Yeah, well, it's kind of the same logic.
Yeah.
Because, there is, the sexuality is always kind of represented in the same way. It's a convention. So the convention gives you the pleasure of convention, but it rarely gives you an excitement or even eroticism. It's pretty rare to be moved by a sexual image in the cinema. I mean, it doesn't happen much. And I think it's because it has to be surprising. So I'm trying to create, of course, I'm trying not to objectify anybody. That's the base. I'm trying to create create scenes that talk about sex in a different way, which means lighthearted, with humor, and surprise, and with a very active viewer. I think it's, so if you want your viewer to be active, you have to put him or her as an investigator of the image in looking at, and the sex scene with the armpit, the penetration of the armpit, puts you in that position when you know it's sexual, but you don't know where you are, and the image is in dialogue with you. And I think that's a way to embody sexuality also, which is sometimes it's about being quite honest and candid about what you want to give as a feeling, and then the then find the image. That's always the hard part. But that's the process.
Mm. And of course, men are entirely absent in the film, but they loom large because, of course, the entire reason for Marianne and Eloise to be together is so that Marianne can make Eloise presentable for a male suitor. What was your thinking in having the movie absent of men but having that kind of presence and also the use of subverting the male gaze, I guess, is the broader question there, but having men present but not literally? That was a lot of a question.
Yeah.
All of that.
I'm not sure what I should talk about. What was your last sentence?
I don't know. the men there but not, you know, and just having the fact that it's the irony of it, the whole portrait is for a man, but that it within that, that the this love story blossoms is incredible.
Yeah, well, it's the tools of cinema. It's really using the tools of cinema and thinking that what you put in the frame is what you're looking at, but the frame also defines the frame of their life. Mm-hmm. And we can feel patriarchy. We know, because we're not losing time talking about the obstacles, because they're so obvious. And also not putting a name in the frame, because I don't want to objectify men either, so I don't want to craft this character that would only be here for the purpose of conflict. But that produces ideas for cinema, because actually this man in the kitchen just saying hello makes everybody, destroys everybody in the room, men and women. And that's the scare jump of patriarchy. And we experimented. It's like we're so depressed that there's a man in the frame. And we actually feel it. I don't know if it has ever been that obvious, deliberate. And, you know, I even saw something the other day. It was amazing. It's also because we get to connect to a man's body. It's like, oh, we haven't looked at them. Their skin, their, you know, because we're never looking at men, you know. We're never looking at them. And there was a, when the man nods, then there's a close-up of his hands. Mm. And you look at the end of a man, like you would rediscover it at the end. There was a man the other day, and he saw this, and he saw the end of the man, and I saw him looking at his hand. And I was looking differently at his hand. Because he had been in the, I mean, he was rediscovering his body. And that's the experience we are trying to give, you know? Yeah. To cinema. And it tells, you know, not looking at men makes you actually look at them and being curious, you know, and not them not being this universal thing that doesn't have to be looked at. And, you know, giving them that perspective on them is also what you do when you're putting them out of frame.
Mm. Yeah, no, more of it, I say. Also, I'm just curious with your previous work, you know, you've largely worked with newcomers or, you know, people fairly early on in the business. But here, you know, you're working with established cast. What kind of challenges did that create or opportunities for you, sort of working with a different kind of level of experience within the team?
It is an identified cast, but it is, it's Adele. So, yeah. We've grown together, so she doesn't feel like this actress, big actress in the system. And then Noémie Merlant is also quite, she's happening, but it doesn't give you much pressure. Mm-hmm. The comfort of working with professionals, so, which is something that I'd never done before, which means it's not you, they have more range.
Yeah.
Just have more range.
Sure.
And also morally. Morally working with non-professional makes you in such a strong responsibility because you don't want to have to negotiate with their limits. I don't. So it's more comfortable in a way. Mm. And even Valeria Golino, she's, I know her in life. Uh-huh. And that's also why, I still want to work in kind of, the more prototypal way, and if you have the right prototype, then you can, even if you take people from the system, they are inventors with you, and I see it that way. Mm. So it's about the spirit you create and the reason why you pick people. It was actually I think my most peaceful experience was that. And I didn't expect that. Actually.
Yeah. I'm not breaking in news here, and I think you've discussed it before, but, with Adele having been your partner previously, how did you broach it with her that you wanted her in this role? And, it goes to some personal places here and, making a film about her and maybe a little bit about you, maybe. I'm not sure. How did, was that a bit weird?
Yeah. No, it wasn't, actually.
Yeah?
It's really a way, because it's really a way to actually talk about our relationship in the present.
Mm.
Because, when we were together, we didn't work together.
Sure.
Because, I'm not in that idea.
Yeah.
And we really wanted to work together again, and it's really about this task giving us the confidence to invent art and also to enlarge our conversation, our intellectual conversation about cinema.
Mm.
With a team, first a team of people that are going to do the film, but then also I feel like we have a team in life, of people seeing the film. And so we were really down. It was about telling our how strong we are together today, mm-hmm. I think, mostly. So it didn't feel weird because it's a fiction that becomes truth. It's not about the truth that becomes fiction.
Sure. Maybe it's weird to ask you this, but what do you think it is about this film that has struck a chord with so many people? Sort of, most people I speak to just feel the same as I do, male, female, of all persuasions. It's just a gorgeous film. What do you think it is?
Well, I think it's about the fact that the film is filling a void that for some people, a void that they need to fill, they wanted to fill, and I'm thinking about...
Yeah.
When I see women in their 60s, in their 60s, saying thank you, it's not the same thank you as a guy who's 25, but they're both deep thank yous. But I think, it has a reparation for some people. They've been waiting to see themselves, to be seen, mostly. Mm-hmm. It's that. It's not about what you see. It's about the fact that you feel seen by the film. And this works with male, female. Like I've been interviewed by straight male journalists telling me, like, wow, this is so closer to my relationship with my wife than what I see in straight films. So it's about feeling seen, and that's super powerful because it's either because you didn't feel seen, you were aware of that, and you were suffering about that, because then it's kind of a propaganda against you. And it's about filling a void you didn't know to be filled.
Yeah.
And that's also very powerful. And when that hits men, for instance, it's super powerful. So I think that's how it works, actually.
Mm. That has to feel good. And what is next for you? Where do you go from here? What's next on your horizon?
I don't think so, because I'm really still, really recommitted to the promotion of the film.
Yeah.
And, I'm talking to you this morning, and then I'm heading to Italy for a week. The film's going to be released at Christmas, like in Australia.
Mm.
And it's really doing well abroad, and I'm... and with the Golden Globes nomination, so I'm going to live with the film a little bit, and then start to think about something new. Yeah. But I'm not making a lot of films, so each time I'm like really going with every step and talking about it. I'm not done with it yet, I think.
Yeah, no, there's plenty of life left in this one yet. And congratulations on the Golden Globe nomination as well. I mean, you should have been in more categories, but yes, absolutely, congratulations on the one nomination. Are you being pursued at all for English language films, like on the strength of this? Does Hollywood want its mitts on you?
Yeah, I have an agent, and I received some scripts. It's just, I would totally want to work with speaking actors or actresses, and even but it's about the culture also.
Mm.
How do you want to establish the same culture of making films, and I sure would need to know about that, so I'm really trying to if it happens, it's whether I get to know this culture, so I'm a director doing handmade sales to get it,
Yeah.
Or it's about bringing our culture the way we do it as if possible. I don't know. It's really quite a political question.
So, it is.
But of course, I'm open because my films I connect more. Of course, all the critics, connect, look at my work. I do feel seen mm-hmm. in the States, in the UK, and in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So this is important. So I'm going to see what they... I'm going to be, how do you say that word? Vigilant about how they see me. Yeah, I want to have the dialogue.
Absolutely.
Striking.
On your terms. Mm. One question we'd like to end with, kind of what you've been watching lately. Just get a sense of what's been on your radar. Have you had a chance to see anything lately? And, either liked or disliked. We take those two. What have you seen lately?
I haven't been to the cinema. what have I been watching? No, I think, it's not very original, but, the last thing that I've been watching and enjoying crazy was Fleabag. Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Mm.
Fleabag. So it's a trend, but it's a brilliant piece of everything, I must say. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, good one. I came late to it too, so yeah, no, that is a good one. That is popular for good reason. Look, thank you, Celine. It's such a treat to talk to you, and genuinely thank you for your film. It's wonderful to tell you that myself. So, yeah, all the best, and enjoy this journey with it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you.
All the best, you too.
So that was Celine Sciamma talking to you, Fee, about your favourite movie of 2019. And now, why don't we kick on to television? And in order to do that, we've invited a special guest into the studio with us.
Known to friends of the show.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, John Boehm, channel manager of SBS Viceland.
Hi, John.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
How was your year in television?
It was great. There's more than ever. There's less and less reason to ever go outside. It's fantastic.
So let's just forget that advice about
working out now that you've seen Free Solo? Because we're about to deliver our top 10 lists of the best television of 2019. And so...
best television of 2019 that Ben has seen.
You've
probably seen more, I dare say.
That each of us have seen. And why don't we start with our special guest, John? I'm very keen to know what your top 10 is. Why don't we start with your 10? Number 10. What is your number 10?
Coming in at number 10.
Is what, is? John?
So, my 10th favourite show of the year, which sounds it's very odd to say, is a show that I've talked about briefly before on this podcast, but not this one specifically, and it is The Mind Explained.
I remember.
Can't say the word explained without hearing that theme song.
Yes, out on Netflix.
Yes, so this show's had two regular seasons of Explained, but they did their first mini-series in September this year called The Mind Explained. It's a documentary series produced by Vox, the news agency out of the US.
Yeah.
So it was a 5-episode series with episodes on memory, dreams, anxiety, mindfulness, and psychedelics. It was narrated by Emma Stone. Every episode, they always get a sort of famous person to narrate.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, the favorite was on my list.
Okay.
Good segue.
Yeah. Great overlap. It's just, you know, as I said previously about Explained, it is just a basic documentary series. Like, I think I've described it as like Wikipedia, the TV show. It just gives you this great intro to these topics, but it's just done in such a entertaining and sort of fresh way. And I can't get enough of it.
And you keep telling me to watch it, and I haven't watched it yet.
Same.
So this is going on my summer viewing list for sure.
And what I assume will be my 10th favourite show of 2020 is Sex Explained, which starts January 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
So once you've caught up with all that, there's another
Who's narrating that one?
I don't know how to say her name. Janelle
Moray.
The singer.
Yeah.
Janelle Moray.
Yeah, great.
She's hosting it. Narrating it, sorry.
Wonderful. And what's coming in at number 9, John?
Well, coming up with this list, I had some issues about, you know, is a returning series the same as a new series? Does your top 10 have to be all new series? Can it be a mix? Anyway, it's a mix.
Because, I've done a mix.
Great.
Because
most of these are returning series.
Okay. Yeah, great.
So coming in at number 9, although it could be much higher because it is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Spit it out, man.
much suspense, yeah. John. Come on.
I'm just trying to build the
attention. It's a long show.
Okay, sorry. 5th and final season of You're the Worst.
Yes.
Yeah. So started in January, watched from a little hospital bed. Side note, we can get to that later. And, you know, over the...
Follow John on Twitter to understand.
Yeah. Over the 5 seasons, without getting dramatic, I think has been one of the like most impactful shows I've ever watched. So it was great to see it wrap up.
I love that show so much. Yeah, and I feel like, again, like very influential in that sort of half hour, just very drawn from like authentic experiences.
Yeah. Well, you and I were talking recently about Girls and how, you know, looking back on it now, you know, there's a million of those kind of shows.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was, like, completely new and completely different. And I kind of feel like You're the Worst was a bit of that as well. There's certainly lots of shows in the You're the Worst mold these days.
Yeah.
But when You're the Worst came along, it was like,
it felt
holy
very
hell.
New. Mm. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And you really advocated for that and then to get it. Like, you're SBS Vice Land channel manager and you really went hard to get it. And now, so we can watch it at SBS On Demand now.
Yes, it's one of the many... joys of my job is that when I like a show, I can attempt to go and buy it. And a colleague of ours who was talking to someone who also sort of knows me and knows how sort of quiet I can be.
Except for when you're on mic.
Except for when I'm on mic. She described to him the happiest she's ever seen me as being the like day we got the email confirming we'd acquired You're the Worst.
Aww.
Well, so, I can't wait to... see how happy you'll be when we get to your number 1. But let's go to your number...
Is it one you've bought?
Yeah, number 8, please.
Number 8, again, the final season of a long-running... Sorry, I don't mean to tease it like this each time.
I love it. No, I love it.
So the final season of a long-running and, you know, beloved series, the 7th season of Veep.
Yeah,
oh, yes.
That's on my list.
Yeah. I don't know how much more there is to say about Veep at this point, but I think it got better over the 7 series. I personally never loved the thick of it. Like, Armando Iannucci's great, but I almost feel like he's too much for me at times. So I think when he actually sort of moved away from Veep, it maybe got a bit more accessible for me.
Okay.
I debated... Veep didn't fall on my top 10, but it was close to being... It was there at one point.
Okay.
I didn't love this final season. I almost was going to sort of put it up there just to recognise the legacy of the show, which I have utterly adored.
Mm.
But I don't know that this last season did it for me.
Well, a lot of people seem to love the finale and how it all ended, and I didn't.
Mm.
But that said, it still was kind of one of the most enjoyable things to watch, and I rewatched the whole six other seasons in lead up, and it's great.
See, I missed a little bit in the middle, so I still don't understand the complete change in Jonah, the tall aide. So I don't really get how he became how he did in the end.
Mm.
But that aside, love the show.
Yeah.
Number seven.
So I was our first, I guess, entertainment series. We've had some comedies and documentary series.
Mm-hmm.
But coming in at number seven, and they broadcast two seasons of this year, so it's both series 8 and season 9.
For those attempting to follow at home.
Yeah. So my number seven show is both the seasons 8 and 9.
Doesn't matter. What is it?
Goddamn hell, it chose this show.
It's all going to be worth it, guys. Is the British entertainment series Taskmaster.
Oh.
Which I feel like neither of you have watched.
I've seen a lot of ads for it.
Okay.
Yes, I have watched it.
Okay, well, I...
Not and, seasons and 8 and 9, though.
That's your review of it. I've watched it.
It's a fun show.
If people aren't familiar with it, it's hosted by Alex Horn and Greg Davies. Unlike a lot of sort of comedy panel British shows, they have the same guests across the whole season. So it's not like they get in a different panel of people every week. So you get to know these same five comedians who every week are set a bunch of tasks. So they're in studio, but then it cuts to them doing the task, and obviously they all do
the challenge. They're given a challenge,
yeah, and they all do it separately, so they don't know how each other have completed the task. And a lot of the humor comes out of how differently they'll attempt the same task.
Because we talked about Knives Out being a show that the ensemble, and they're just sort of enjoying each other's company, and we're enjoying that as well. And I think that this show exists for that very purpose.
Yes, that absolutely sums it up. Like, you know, a task can be something as ridiculous as, like, here's a giant block of ice, destroy it, you have 20 minutes.
Okay.
And, you know, one person will try to melt it and one person will throw it in the river. And anyway, it's ridiculous. The show just brings me so much joy. And, you know, that's different to, you know, a drama or even a comedy, but there's just, like, a joyousness to the show, and I fucking love it.
Mm.
And I think I hear an Australian version's on the way.
Exciting.
Ooh.
Six.
Number six is a miniseries that only just finished, only just started in Australia. It's the 6-part comedy miniseries, Mrs. Fletcher.
Mm.
I
thought you were going to say something else. No. I haven't seen it, but it looks good.
Catherine Hahn. It's based on a book of the same name. The best way that I've heard it described is that it's a coming of age for two people. It's the coming of age for the newly empty nested mother, Catherine Hahn, and it's a coming of age for the douchey, like, jock 18-year-old kid who's just started in college.
So he has emptied the nest. Her son.
So he's emptied the nest. He was kind of like the cool kid at high school, has moved to college and realized he's completely out of his depth, which is fantastic
good
to see.
Yep.
And then there's Catherine Hahn, who has, you know, recently divorced, son's just gone to college, now has an empty home, and has sort of realized, what have I been doing with my life, and starts to, you know, discover herself.
Yeah, it gets a bit randy from what I've seen.
It's very, it's like it could basically be described as like an erotic drama or a comedy, because there's a lot of sex and porn from both ends of the spectrum.
What?
For the mother and the son. And it ends sort of fantastically, and it's not returning because it's just based on a book.
I've got a lot of questions. No, yeah.
It's only 7.5 hours, so you really can smash it out. They do. They everyone's smashing out a lot. But it's fantastic.
I'm interested in this spectrum chart. But anyway, let's move on.
So, check it out.
All right, so that was?
Five. That was number six.
That was number six. Mrs. Fletcher. It's all on Foxtel.
Five.
Number five. Also on Foxtel. Also fantastic. Also assume is going to be on both of your lists. The second season of Succession.
Yes.
It is not on my list. only because I have not yet completed it. So I've kind of put it in my, and we'll get to this later, into my summer viewing category, like things I need to catch up on.
See, I've started it but haven't finished it, but it's still on my list.
Oh, good times.
Well, anyway, watch it. It's fantastic. I think season two is better than season one. Obviously, it's like right in our wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Given that
we all really, really love the show.
The heirs of media moguls. Yeah. So we can all really relate to that struggle.
Yeah.
We
just sort of sit back and watch it Gogglebox style and say, like, which one is me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Such a shiv. Anyway, there's enough being said about Succession. If you haven't watched it, go and do it.
Correct.
Four,
yes. Number four, this was another earlier in the year series, aired on Foxtel once again.
What is with you and the Foxtel?
Oh, no. They've got some great deals here. So coming at number four is the Comedy Central series, The Other Two.
Ah, yes. You have raved personally about this, Jimmy.
Yes, raved about it a lot.
Do it on mic.
So The Other Two, it is from some SNL writers, and it is about three siblings, an older brother and sister who are in their 20s, and a younger brother who's like 12 or 13. The older brother and sister have, you know, spent their whole lives trying to be actors and dancers and make it in New York, sort of meanwhile they're like waiters. Mm. And then their 13-year-old younger brother puts a song up on YouTube, gets a billion views, and becomes Justin Bieber.
Isn't that always the way?
Yeah. So the other two is in reference to the other two siblings. The mother who's played by...
I just want to categorically hate all YouTubers.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's the point of the sitcom.
Yeah.
So the mother who becomes like the mummager or
mummager.
Mummager. Yeah, I've never said that word out loud.
Good to have
and you
a
never
recorded.
Will
yeah,
again.
Yeah, never will again. Is played by Molly Shannon, who's also just as out of her depth, but like trying to do the best for her 13-year-old who's now the next Justin Bieber. It sounds all very superficial, but it's actually kind of surprisingly deep and sweet. You know, one of the storylines is that the father died sort of not long before the show starts, so they're dealing with the grief of that. And it's sort of revealed how he died is also, like, surprisingly dark for a Comedy Central show. And then the other thing that the show's sort of been called out for, if you see it on any sort of top 10 lists, is the portrayal of the older male sibling and his sexuality. So it's kind of dealt with very sensitively and in a way that I guess a lot of people haven't seen portrayed on television, let alone a sitcom. So it's light and fun and silly, but also has these really great moments. Mm. And I loved it, and I've watched it twice already.
Sounds good.
Mm. And I feel like it's sort of gone under the radar, so I'm glad that you've called attention to it. But now we are getting up to the very top of your list, where I assume, you know, I assume that there was lots of clashes for what would take these top three spots.
Yes.
Run us through them.
Okay. Coming in at I'm going to stop saying that. Okay. So my third favourite, which again could have been my number one. It's hard to get the top three down to a top three.
Yep.
That said, it's everyone's favourite show of the year, the second season and the final season of Fleabag.
Mm.
Yeah. Fair.
Yeah. It's right up there on my list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we even need to say anything?
No, I don't. I think at this point we don't.
Yeah.
Like, it's that first episode. It's
definitely, I think, one of the defining shows of the year.
Yeah, and I think maybe the way that we, you know, look back at Girls or You're the Worst or whatever, people are going to be talking about Fleabag for a long time, and there's going to be a lot of imitators and influenced by. Which, it's for the best.
It's already become the go-to reference point, I feel
for
like.
Everything. Yeah, it's for everything. It's Fleabag meets whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's fantastic, and, you know, Phoebe Waller-Bridge deserves
every all the accolades.
And more.
And more.
But who deserves even more accolades is whatever show is above that on your list.
Yes.
Number two,
which no one will have watched because it hasn't aired yet in Australia, but is coming to SBS Iceland next year, is the Showtime documentary series Couples Therapy.
Oh, yes. I haven't seen it, but again, you rave about a lot of things. Yes.
It is also on my list. It is fantastic.
How have I not seen this yet? I need to get on your links. tell us why.
Well, I think so. Just to set it up for people, I mean, I think we have seen shows in the past that, you know,
inside
the therapist's office. Right, correct. And so this is taking sort of across like a good portion of a year, I think sort of four couples,
yeah.
Kind of, I mean, they're all sort of New Yorkers, so kind of all sort of hip New Yorkers, you know, slightly different sort of life stages, you know, different life experience, kind of different sort of backgrounds, but they are all at a point in their relationship where they're kind of at a crossroads, you know, the point at which you would seek out help for your relationship. To answer the kind of question at the core is this something that we can solve or not?
Yeah.
And there are so many elements which are fantastic about it. I think.
And just to clarify, it's real.
Yeah,
this is a documentary. I think people, even watching the trailer, you could think it's a drama the way it's filmed.
For sure, you know, and we've had dramas again set in therapist's office. But this, I think, is directed with a documentary filmmaker and very much with like a documentary eye. And the casting, I think, is impeccable. And the therapist is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think like a really smart choice. And I feel like sort of we've seen this a little bit more on screen now, sort of through different stories, but we get to see her speaking to her own therapist about her challenges dealing with these couples, which is a way that you get an insight into what she's thinking in the room.
Yeah.
And I think that you sort of, she's kind of on a journey with them as well, because she, like us in the audience, is kind of thinking, ugh, those two should never stay together. That guy's a dickhead.
Yeah, and I think she talks about working through how much power she has over these people, because she can go, oh, you guys should do this or you shouldn't do that, and she doesn't know if that's right or wrong. Like,
yeah,
it's fantastic. It's like, it's a cliche to say it, but I think it is some of the like best storytelling that we've seen this year, and part of it's just because it's so powerful, because it is real.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, is it made by the people who made the documentary Wiener?
It is.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
And there's literally another show called Couples Therapy, which I think aired on VH1 or something. Like, there's really terrible and sort of just
there's a kind of
reality ways.
Generic element to it
that
it manages to really successfully overcome.
Yeah, and part of it's the set and it's just filmed so intimately. I don't know how they do it, but yeah, it's just such a unique and interesting show.
Mm.
So, I mean, in Australia, it's a 2020 show.
Yes.
So you're getting ahead maybe on what's going to be on my list next year, probably?
Yeah.
Just putting it out there. Yeah. So,
well, there is going to be a season two as well.
Okay, so. Goodo.
Have we had a chance to see your number one television show of 2019?
We need icy cold cans of Coke with that kind of voice. John, drum roll, please. Jeremy.
So, the John's number one show of 2019 is the HBO, BBC, Studio Canal distributed drama broadcast on SBS, Years and Years.
Woo!
No surprise.
That's on my list too.
It's on my list as well.
And we've dedicated a whole podcast previously. But needless to say, it's all still on SBS On Demand and it's fantastic. And there wasn't a show this year that I like rushed to watch the next episode as quickly as with this show. I think I've cried in like two things in my entire life. And one of them was an episode of Years and Years. So in terms of like impact.
Was it episode 4?
It's the one you think it is.
Yeah.
Which I did on my desk, by the way, guys. So don't watch it at your desk at work. But yeah, what more can we say?
I mean, just go watch it really is what we should
say.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard about it, if you are coming into this cold, I think that just good to know that this show, I think, gives such a chilling and very accurate feeling portrait of the world that we're heading into. I think, like, that's a reason to watch it, if nothing else. But it delivers on so many other levels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the, like, recent UK elections, the number of people I saw tweeting about, you know, Years and Years coming true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the new Nostradamus, I think. Like, for the next 15 years, everyone will go, Years and Years picked that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a great thing. Yeah. But anyway, incredible show.
Yeah, an incredible list.
Incredible list, John.
Well, thanks, guys.
I feel like there's going to be lots of overlap. I'm going to just power through my list. Because I think that we're covering a lot of similar ground here. Again, like with my list, there's a little bit of what are we going to remember this year for. So my number 10 is the final season of Game of Thrones. You know, this is a phenomenal show, which I had my issues with it. I felt like it began to rush through sort of in these last couple of years once they'd moved past the books. But I just think, again, we won't be able to think back of 2019 without thinking about Game of Thrones coming to an end.
I'm okay with it. I've never seen it, so.
Your number 9, Ben?
My number 9 is Struggle Street. We aired the third season of this year on SBS, and I think it's the strongest of all the three. Mm. Just beautiful documentary storytelling in regional New South Wales, very much about a community afflicted by drought, which we sort of continue to see the ramifications of.
It's only compounding, really, isn't it? I mean, we speak in the middle of a heat wave, bushfires all around the country.
Yeah. So just how these very ordinary families try and manage their way through that. Mm. Yeah, I just thought a terrific series that we put out this year.
And it's all still up on SBS On Demand.
Yes, it is. Number 8.
My number 8 is Couples Therapy again. So might just jump to my number 7.
Yeah, so it's the early discussion.
Which is The Mandalorian. Oh. So, you know, this is like very much pulp TV, deliberately so.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, just the way that Baby Yoda has conquered the internet, this show has become the defining show for a new streaming service, which is going to be in probably most of the homes in the world in, you know, not too long. So the show, I think, is, you know, rollicking good time, and it's going to be part of how we remember this year.
Yeah, it's great. Not on my list, but great.
Number 6.
Chernobyl.
We can't laugh when you say Chernobyl.
Sorry.
Chernobyl was a disaster of an event, but the very opposite of that in a series. I just thought that this was impeccable storytelling, kind of, again, just sort of about like very ordinary people that had to deal with something that was beyond their comprehension for large part. Just sort of.
And I think for a lot of people, until they saw the series, Chernobyl was also beyond their comprehension. Mm. Like, I don't know how much everyone else knew about Chernobyl, but I thought it was a nuclear power plant that had an issue. Didn't realize it, like, nearly destroyed all of Europe and half the planet. Mm. Like, to actually see it play out was pretty incredible.
Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, I was very into that.
And it wasn't my honorable mentions, but figured someone else would cover it.
There's
off.
A hell of a lot else. Well, I never got past episode 1, I have to say, but that's on me. Number 5.
Second season of Barry.
Oh.
So I am a big fan of this show, about a hitman who wants to quit the biz and join a different biz, taking acting lessons in LA. And, of course, as everyone knows, if you've had any kind of mobster life, you know, you attempt to get out, that it draws you back in. And, you know, it's a show which I think is very smart, very well written, great performances, great sort of riffing off, you know, sort of like character interplay. But I think that what sort of tops it all off is that Barry himself is such a complex character. And as soon as you kind of think, oh, you know, he's just sort of a lovable guy who fell in with the wrong crowd, he will do something that will make you think, like, no, he's morally repugnant. So it's very smart in kind of playing with that line of you know, where do you side with this lead character?
Great.
Coming at number 4?
Number 4 is a season 4, final season of The Good Place. Mm. Is it deserving of being this high up on my list? I'm not even sure. But I have just so much love for this show. It just gives me the warm and fuzzies. Like, maybe it sort of drifted away from the consciousness a little bit, but it is sort of coming to a close. And I think it's just such a sweet-natured, very funny, smart show. Love it.
Great. Number 3.
Number 3 is Years and Years.
Number 2.
Number 2 is the Netflix drama Unbelievable.
It's on
based
my list.
On real events. Just so, so compelling. Has so much to say about how women are treated in like many different roles, and we get that story from told from different sides, and in some ways just like a celebration of just terrific professional women doing their jobs exceptionally well. I really, really loved this.
No argument from me. It's on my list too. Okay, brace yourselves, everybody. I think I know what this might be. Number one, Ben.
Second season of Fleabag.
Woo!
So Fee, like...
And next. As discussed,
have all of yours been covered?
No, there's a couple that haven't,
actually. Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
All right. So the bits of my top 10 we're talking about.
Yeah. What have you got that we haven't? I want to know.
Unlike you, well, much like my film list, I found it hard to drill down to 10 again. One honourable mention, not the thing I just talked about, Undone, only because I haven't finished watching it, but on Amazon. This is the rotoscoped drama.
Yes, I have not seen this.
Yeah, really intriguing.
I've heard about it.
But I haven't watched enough for it. For me to know exactly where it's going to go, but that's the rest of my summer viewing.
Great.
Just FYI. Okay, couple we've already covered. So number 10, already covered, Succession.
Yes. Number 9.
Already covered, Veep.
8.
Already covered, Unbelievable.
7.
Not covered, Schitt's Creek.
Ah.
I just love this show to bits and it just keeps getting better. I'm not sure I'm entirely all caught up, but...
The show's finished.
I think so. Yeah. Well,
I know there's so much love for this show out there, and it's one that's grown over time because I think people didn't necessarily give it time of day to start with.
Yep.
But then kind of the fact that there were more seasons available just meant that people binged it and fell in love with it.
Kept going, and it got deeper the more you went in. The deeper you got into the seasons, the characters found more strength, and there was like Dan Levy just has, shot up in my esteem.
Fantastic eyebrows.
And jumpers. I mean, don't start me on the jumpers. But all of them, the way the ensemble here, the way they play off each other, the hilarious dialogue. I just adore this show and I'm going to finish it over the holidays and it's my number 7.
Great. Number 6.
Number 6 is Shrill. Looking at you, John Boehm. Wasn't on your list.
Top of my honourable mentions, he says, pointing to his list.
I did cite that, it's true.
So, yes, could have very easily made the top 10 for me.
Yes.
And very excited for season 2 in January.
I know.
And still can't see Edie Bryant dancing in that pool without hearing that song. Like, it's a great app.
So true. Yeah. So, for all those reasons, it's my number 6.
Number 5.
Have discussed it on this podcast previously, but Dead to Me. Also a Netflix one, thoroughly enjoyed, sort of a drama with comedic elements. Again, a great ensemble cast of, I always say Christina Aguilera, it's not Christina Aguilera, Christina Applegate, thank you.
I haven't seen this, but I want to see the Christina Aguilera version.
It's dirtier. No, this show's kind of dirty too. No, it's wonderful and funny. Yeah, it was
we'll
a great
discovery. Dirtiest show list later. That's yet to come.
Double R's. And there is a new season coming, I think.
Number 4.
Already covered, Fleabag.
Great. Number 3.
A two-part documentary that was on television and I watched entirely through my fingertips, Leaving Neverland.
Oh, yes. Very good selection.
Thank you. Horrifying and beautifully made and just letting Michael Jackson's victims tell their story. And I don't know how you can watch that and still listen to Michael Jackson, quite frankly.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Two like very beautiful men who have obviously had so much trauma in their lives.
Absolutely.
And just the way that they tell their story in itself is incredibly moving.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the way they acknowledge how complicated it is to come forward with their story now and having denied it in the past and just that horrendous impact of the abuse on them. It incredible and probably should be higher up on the list, but, you know, it was such a great year.
Yeah.
So Leaving Neverland.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, 3's not bad. Yeah.
Number 2.
Already covered, Years and Years.
And what is Fiona's number 1 television show of 2019?
Drum roll, please. 63 Up.
Oh.
Hey, see, you all wish you could redo your list now, don't you?
Yes.
Yep.
I'm
embarrassed.
so bad. Yes. So bad on both of you. You work for SBS as well. I mean, I can't believe it. But 63 up, because I've spent so long with these people throughout my life.
For sure.
Yeah. And a highlight of my year, quite frankly, interviewing Michael Apted about about his life and their lives and the show.
Highlight of my year, listening to you interview Michael Apted.
Oh, you're too kind, Ben. I did put that out there. Thank you for taking the bait. No, but truly just...
My top 10 fee interviews of the year.
Oh, we'll get to that. That you've listened to. wonderful. And now, especially as they're in their 60s, there's a melancholy element coming into it. We've lost some of the participants of this bold social experiment.
This is going to sound like a cliche, but there is a wisdom that comes with age. Mm. And we're at different stages of our lives, but we all have grown up with these people for some extent. And like a beauty of this series is that you can always find the addition that is most closely related to your own age, which perhaps can speak to you the most, but then you have the ability to see, you know, where they were at both previously and since that moment and how they've learnt and grown from that. And they're all in such a beautifully, you know, reflective moment in their lives where they can think back about the good things they did and the lessons they learnt from other parts of their lives. No, I think that's such a wonderful choice, Fee.
Why, thank you. Can't take all the credit. It's just a really good show. So there you have it. And one very notable omission for me, I haven't put Handmaid's Tale on there, which might be weird.
And it was your number one last year.
Yes. Because I just, it's kind of my always number one in a way as well. Like, it's just always there, so I feel like I can't always make Handmaid's Tale my number one.
Yeah.
But it is end of the decade.
Yes.
Unless you're a pedant and you say next year is, and that's fine. I don't want to get into that. But being 2019, there's a certain end of the...
Last 10 years.
So, looking back, it's sort of my evolving best of the decade. Like, it's a show that I've just loved and have latched onto, so I feel it's... Not in this particular 10. Look, I'm making my own rules here as well. So anyway, Handmaid's Tale, always love it. So Handmaid's Tale is there, but it's just not in this list of 10.
Well, so that maybe leads us to just thinking about our, like what are our significant, if not best, shows of the last 10 years. So would Handmaids be yours?
Yeah, I think so. I adore the show and the way they tell this story and the where they've lifted off the source material to make it its own. Margaret Atwood set them a challenge now, having made the testaments. Yeah, yeah. Now they have to sort of follow her trajectory. Well played, Ms. Atwood. But so I just – and also just the alarming way that it mirrors the times as well. Yeah. In the way that Years and Years is projecting where we're going to be, I don't want to say Handmaid's is too, but there are elements that are just too close to reality for me that are uncomfortable. Yes. But it's also just an amazing drama with an incredible central performance from Elizabeth Moss that has warmth and empathy as well, some humour.
Mm.
So it's not the depressing hellscape of a watch and that a lot of people who don't watch it think it might be.
Yes.
Well said. Anyway, I adore it.
Very good choice. And I think the richness of that show... Mm. I mean, the fact that you do a podcast for every single episode is evidence of that. And that so many people love both the show and the podcast.
Oh, thanks again.
John, like I put this challenge to you before the show to think of your best show of the last decade. Do you have one?
I've got like 11.
Oh, my God.
So I think you said one.
No, I found it really hard.
Yeah.
Just because a lot of shows that I thought were from the last decade were actually from the 2000s. So, like, my go-to was, like, Parks and Rec and Community. And those kind of, but they were both 2009, which I guess is technically in the last 10 years.
Mm.
But actually, to look back on the last decade, I probably would have to say You're the Worst, which I guess we've already covered.
Yeah.
And, you know, for why we've already covered it. But a very close number two, just because we haven't spoken about it and I want to give it a plug, is the 2011... ABC America sitcom Happy Endings,
which I never actually gotten into, like have seen.
Yeah, well, I think it's kind of got a bit of a Schitt's Creek about it, where people maybe like it is a very shiny network sitcom. Like on the surface, there's a lot of reasons not to watch it. But equally, as someone who's rounding out their first decade out of the closet, it you know, it had a portrayal of a gay man that people still write think pieces about. And for someone who had just come out of the closet, the show meant a lot to me. And it's also genuinely, like, hilarious. So for those reasons, You're the Worst and Happy Endings are kind of my most influential shows of the decade.
Not bad.
And I do like that criteria. I'm going to retroactively apply that to all my top 10 lists. It's things that could most generate think pieces.
Yeah.
That's why I put in the Joker. Just saying.
Not on my watch.
But my number one show of the decade, just because I am so fond of this show, is The Americans. For me, I just, you know, when I think of, like, pinnacle of television that I love, story of a relationship, first and foremost, under the dressing of a Cold War sort of spy thriller, but really about two people who had to fake that they were in a marriage and discover that they're actually in love with each other, and the kind of challenges and the kind of, like, pain and turmoil that creates. And a show that was smart enough not to lean into the trappings of doing the 80s as, you know, the kind of cliche version of the 80s that gave us, you know, a kind of much more bleak and somber version of the 80s and is all the richer for it.
Very good. What an eclectic mix. Where does one go from here?
Well, why don't we go looking forward? A hopefully fantastic summer for everybody awaits.
It is our last day at work.
Yes, it is our last day at work. I think we're all... can't wait to just have a break. And a break means a few things. It means for Jeremy Wilmot, our producer, apparently hitting the gym because he's been watching Free Solo.
Climbing every mountain.
But for many of us, it involves some viewing activities. So, Fee, why don't you just sort of talk us through what are the highlights of what's coming out that you would recommend people go and see?
Okay, well... I think for the first time in a little while, I've seen every Boxing Day movie release. So I'll just do a little quick overview of them. I've already spoken at length and to the director of Portrait of a Lady on Fire, but that is a Boxing Day release and that's the number one.
My ticket is booked.
Well, good. Well, you're doing that while we're talking. That's weird. But it's something you must do. Take John with you. Also out is The Truth. There's actually a really good mix of indie films this year. Like, Star Wars is out already.
I am taking my son along to see that tonight.
Okay. Seen it. No spoilers. Right. We'll talk after. Mm-hmm. So that's already still in cinemas and it'll have made several $1 billion by the time you go tonight,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, by the time you hear this,
yeah.
Dear listener.
Yes. But in a non-Harry Potter or, you know, there's no huge blockbuster. There is Jumanji, the sequel, which I've seen, and is Jumanji the sequel, and it's exactly what you expect. A lot of colour and movement.
I did like the first new one.
The first new one.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's just more of the same, and that's fine. Next is The Truth. It's a French film by the Japanese director Kori Eda, who directs Juliette Binoche and Catherine Deneuve and Ethan Hawke in a great story. Catherine Deneuve plays, surprise, surprise, a cinema legend in France. Juliette Binoche is her daughter. And the mum has written an autobiography and, in inverted commas, the truth, because she's taken some liberties with her life and it's her daughter calling her on that. And it's quite wonderful. And little plug, got an interview with director Kori Eda on the SBS Movies website. So if you might want to check that out, or you see The Truth.
Clicking through to that right now.
I'm okay with that. Also out is Sorry We Missed You, Ken Loach's new film, which is incredible, but you also know what you're getting with a Ken Loach film in that it's not going to be a rollicking good time. It is...
Right.
Well, it's a story of a family on the brink in Britain, and the husband father signs up to a delivery job, but in these zero-hour contracts in that he's a franchise owner, he doesn't work for someone, he owns the business, so he can't take sick leave. You know, he has to find someone if he can't show up for work that day or they lose money. So they're right on the edge. The wife and mum, she's a nurse, also at the brink, has to find her way around to see her patients each day. It's incredibly bleak, but like with Ken Loach films, like, you know, there's a family at the centre of that. So yeah, that's what gives it warmth and empathy, but my God. Yeah, it's...
Well, Bleak and Family sounds like my Christmas. So.
Next!
So I'm on board.
Next is Jojo Rabbit, Taika Waititi's new film. You may be aware of this one where he plays Hitler.
And you've seen it?
I have seen it.
And we should see it?
That's a long pause.
It's going to do really well. It didn't work for me, I have to say. So he plays a version of Hitler. So it's a child's eye view of the Holocaust. And it is a child, the aforementioned Jojo Rabbit's his nickname, his imaginary friend, the very likable, lovable, laughable Adolf Hitler, which as a child indoctrinated by Nazism, he thinks Adolf's the best thing ever, which as a premise is risky
and bold.
Tonally didn't work for me. There's one wonderful scene that comes very late in the film, and I think it came too late for me, but yeah, didn't quite work. And the laughable, lovable Hitler stuff coupled with the Holocaust, and there is a Jewish girl who is in the cupboard, you know, hidden, and it's just another one of those films that I struggle with where it's the onus is on her to change hearts and minds. And
yeah, right.
Didn't work for me. Right. That said, I was in a cinema and everyone around me was, well, they laughed just because Taika Waititi showed up, which I thought, just wait and see. Wait and see what happens.
Mm. This is sort of his attempt to do like a Chaplin.
Yeah, very much. And he's very good at, like, it sets a trap in that, you know, laugh at me being the goofy Hitler and you know what's coming. Absolutely. And that's clever. That's very clever. Mm. I just, tonally, it didn't quite.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, it didn't get me. But I've saved the best for last, Cats. And when I say I've saved the best, I haven't by any means because it's not great. Not good. But it's a hell of a time to watch Tom Hooper's Cats.
I've seen the trailer and I feel like I've seen enough.
Oh, there is so much more. Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking, but I admire the fact that it got made because, I mean...
Well, there's the poster quote.
Yeah, I feel like there's a best worst movie in
absolutely.
The offing.
I was watching it thinking, well, we have to get this. It's a magnificent folly. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, wow. They really went there, and I admire the confidence of everyone involved. I never need to see it again, and there's so much more to be said, but...
People often describe this podcast as a magnificent folly, so...
We should just really change the name to Magnificent Follies. There are people who've seen the musical who probably know what they're expecting, like it's batshit. And there's a plot, it's a very simple plot. There's basically a talent quest for cats, and the best cat will get chosen by Judi Dench, who is this enormous unit with giant shoulders. But that simple premise is made so complicated and it has no reason to be. Yeah, there's not much more I can say. I do think there will be an element of hate watching, like, how bad can this be? Mm. And I'm here to tell you it's more than that. So, like, just go enjoy, have a laugh, cringe.
Does sound like a cult,
all of that.
Cult film.
Yeah, I mean, cult film. It's a lot. And... That's your Boxing Day picks.
Good. Good times.
Yeah.
I'm going to just mention, we sort of referred to this earlier, but some of the things that I personally am going to be spending this summer catching up on that I think will be good summer viewing for me. So Handmaid's Tale Season 3, feel very guilty that I didn't watch this as it was going out.
On your channel.
I know. But what I successfully did do last year was I binged season 2 over the summer and alternated episodes with Eyes on Gilead podcast episodes. And I planned to do the very same thing. It was a summer I felt very well spent. So I want to repeat that again. Succession, we mentioned, I do need to finish that off. You're the Worst, again, I do need to finish that off. On Becoming a God in Central Florida, I'd like to finish that one off. I think that there's a number of these shows. The most recent season of Line of Duty, I want to, like, get my way through that as well. So there's, like, I've got a lot of things on the shelf that I'm looking forward to.
After you go and see Portrait of a Lady on Fire with John on Boxing Day.
That or Cats.
Yeah.
John, how about you? Summer viewing.
The one recommendation I have, it's not even a recommendation, I'm just excited about it. I love the whole British TV tradition of Christmas specials. I think it's amazing. I think more people should do it. I think Netflix are kind of getting into the tradition. But anyway, I'm incredibly excited about the Christmas Day release of the Gavin and Stacey Christmas special. Gavin and Stacey aired in the mid-aughts. Is that what we call that decade?
Noughties.
Yeah. So it's been 10 years since the last episode, and the gang's back together for a Christmas special. I'm very excited. The show meant a lot to me. The show's
meant a lot to a lot of people.
The show's a delight if you've not seen it. It's only 3 seasons and a Christmas special, which comes out on Boxing Day in Australia. So that's what I'm waiting for. Before we go to the movie, we can watch Gavin.
Oh, great. Yeah. This is going to be the best time.
Yeah.
Big day for you guys. One more thing. I'm going away to a film festival in northern New South Wales that I would rave about, and I think you should go there if you're in the area. Screenwave International Film Festival. It's on in Coffs Harbour. It's from the 9th to the 24th in January. Guess what's playing there, guys?
Cats?
No. Guess what's playing there, guys? Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Thank you. Also Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
Oops, that's a bit awkward now. But yes, there's some wonderful films, and I'm going to catch up with a lot of films that have played at other festivals. But yeah, they've found their way up to Coffs Harbour in early January. So go for a swim in the day, go to a movie nighttime. I'm going to be there doing some Q&As, and it's going
to
be great.
Sounds terrific. Come up and say hello to Fiona if you're in attendance there. Come up and say hello to John and I at the movies if you're in the same cinema as us.
Like a Tuggeranong points or something.
Yeah.
Buy my popcorn.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that everyone has a fantastic break over Christmas and New Year. You know, there's a lot going on in the country at the moment, a lot of bushfires. We really hope that everyone comes through all of that safely. And really wish the best for yourself and your families. So that's it for the show and for the year. Thanks, Fiona. It's been a real privilege to be able to chat with you over these last months. I've loved that.
Oh, thank you, Ben. Thanks for joining us this year. And Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Yes, thank you.
John, it's been a delight.
Guys, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, thanks for being a robust fill-in.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for. In work and life, Ben.
Yeah, fantastic.
And Jeremy Wilmot, our hardworking, effervescent producer, thank you.
You're welcome.
I thought that was a hug.
Yeah.
I thought he was coming in for a hug, but no. I couldn't get my mic. Always thinking of the sound. No, thank you kindly. And to our listeners, thank you so much for everyone who's been listening this year. To all our guests, I mean, all these friends of the show
friends
we're accumulating.
Friends of the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Many of whom.
It's an illustrious list.
Right. And we choose well because coincidentally, a lot of them have figured in my top tens this year, not because they came on the show, I hasten to add.
Yeah, no bribery involved.
None whatsoever. Just genuinely pick interviews with the good people.
Yeah, and make sure that you subscribe to the playlist and tell your friends and family in this special time of year to do the same. And they can give us a lot of stars and leave us a nice review. And we do check the reviews and we will name check you on the show if you leave a nice one. Shout out to you, Carolyn, again. And you can also let us know what you thought of the movies and TV shows we discussed, including whatever your top 10s or top 1s of the year.
Or your top 12s.
Of the decade were. You can do that on Facebook or Twitter at SBS Movies. Or individually, I'm on Twitter at Ben Nguyen TV.
I'm on Twitter at Anything But Fifi.
I'm on Twitter at Idance.
And the playlist is produced by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next year.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me. See you guys.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.